Okay, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 188. I am your host, Vince. Over there is your host, Phil.
Hey.
There's Phil. In this episode, we are talking about the winner of the South by Southwest Festival, Shithouse, which I don't know how to announce that without just calling it Shithouse, because that's what it's called. Before we get into that movie, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, or at least most streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @ThreeDrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at ThreeDrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. So, Shithouse, which I thought you were joking when you sent me that text. Like, we should watch it. It's called Shithouse. And all I could think of was that scene from Prince of Thieves.
Oh, yeah.
You mean you changed it to Latrine?
Changed the name.
Yeah. It used to be Shithouse.
It's a good change.
It's a good change.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Man Insights. Yeah.
It's not his best, but it was still good.
It was still good.
You know, it was, that was my first Mel Brooks movie.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was too young for, you know, for Blazing Saddles or Spaceballs. And I, honest to God, like, I've gone back and rewatched Spaceballs, and, like, it's a lot of nothing in that, you know. It's very time-specific a parody.
It's the Austin Powers of Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, where, like, it's spoofing something so specifically that it's, like, it doesn't leave a lot of room for interpretation.
Yeah, it doesn't age well. It's still funny, but it's just, I don't know, it's weird. Did you see that thing on Twitter today where that person, speaking of Austin Powers, as we go from one tangent to the next, this woman posted the fact that she was asked by her acting teacher to do a dramatic monologue.
Yes, I saw that.
So she did the scene from Austin Powers where Dr. Evil, this is now for the listener, she did the scene for Austin Powers where Dr. Evil explains his childhood.
Yeah.
So this is like an attractive blonde woman doing a very dramatic scene, like tight close-up from her cell phone camera, and I'm like, wait, what is she? Oh my God, that's the, you know, the whole thing.
Summer's
about
Summer's in Rangoon. Yeah.
And it's
weird to me that no one would notice that. Like, it was extremely obvious exactly what that part. Maybe I saw the movie too many times, but I was like, oh yeah, I know exactly what she's talking about.
I mean, if there hadn't been a preface in the tweet to say, like, you know, I did this thing from Austin Powers and nobody noticed, I might have been like, wait, what is that? It was just like, it would be like eerily familiar, but she was selling it like very seriously as a, you know, a dramatic
thing.
She did
a good job.
Yeah, it was. And if you didn't know, it would take you a minute. Like, you'd have to have seen that movie within the last week to go, hang on a tick, she's doing that thing from Austin Powers. But
that was good.
It was funny. Occasionally, Twitter does something good. That was a good thing. Mostly, it does bad things.
Mostly, it's bad. Although, now Patrick Stewart finished reading all of Shakespeare's sonnets on there. So,
yeah,
you know, that's out.
I woke up this morning, I was brushing my teeth, and I was just going through my Twitter feed, and do you ever just, like, come across a news story in bits and pieces, and, like, you're kind of like, wait, what are they talking about? So, one person had a tweet, like, did you ever just try not masturbating at work?
I was like, oh, yeah.
What? And then the next thing was somebody else had, like, a reference to celebrities and, like, junk pics or whatever else like that. And then I got to the Vice article about the guy from, I can't think of which publication it was.
I think CNN. He works for CNN, too, right?
No, it was, like, The New Yorker or something like that. It was one of those. You can effort that. But for those of you who missed it, somebody was in a Zoom call.
Oh, The New Yorker.
The New Yorker, yeah, it was The New Yorker. This guy was in a Zoom call for a very important meeting at The New Yorker, and
he is on CNN too.
Oh, is he?
For CNN.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. And for those of you that missed it, this guy didn't realize that his camera was still on, and he, was petting the one-eyed snake, and people were like, hey, Bob, or whatever your name is, what are you doing over there? And, like, I don't know, like, they let him finish? Like, how long into it? We're like, oh, my God, is he masturbating? Like,
I don't understand why that happened. I cannot wrap my head around that.
No. But, like, to me, learning of it like that was a bit like that scene in Jaws where they go to the autopsy room and Hooper pulls back the tarp very dramatically and he, like, gasps and, like, you don't see the body. But, like, that's a lot what that was like for me. But if you did it in, like, really slow motion, that's what that, like, reading that tweet stream was like and then learning that news, it was like, oh, wait. Oh, God. Oh. It just gets worse and worse and worse the more you pull it back. So
yeah, it was terrifying. I don't understand. I just can't understand. Like, I still can't understand. Like, no. Well, that's what he was doing. Why was that happening?
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, it's just you're sitting there going, I can't imagine why. No, I can't do it. I just can't think of it. This has nothing to do with the movie, by the way.
Anyway, the movie.
So, Shit House.
Shit House. What do you think of Shit House?
I read an article. I guess it was the review of it in Variety. And it's like, I really wish that more movie theaters were open so that we would get to see what exactly the marquees would look like. Because, like, the film is just called Shit House. And, like, I'm looking at the poster, and it's %!
Yeah, but it's bleeped on the poster.
Yeah, and you can do it any way you want. In Variety, it was just S and then three dashes and that kind of a thing. But, the film is just plain old called Shit House. So so this was up. This was going to be at you know for reviewing at South by Southwest. That South by Southwest got canceled for obvious reasons. Yet the contest portion, I guess, still went ahead. They gave everyone a screener, and then they watched it, and then this won the whatever the top prize is at South by Southwest. And then you heard of it? How?
I think I just saw it on Metacritic. I was just looking for things that were new, like new releases, which aren't, you know, there aren't many.
Yeah.
And this one was up there and it had decent reviews. So I just started looking around, like, where can we watch it? Because I just assumed that it wasn't out in the theaters and I was right. So,
yeah, I mean, it is in some places in New Jersey, actually. I Googled the movie and I got showtimes for a place in, like, Clifton, New Jersey. So there are some theaters that are open and showing it, but we're not there yet. Although I did just find out that my local theater had a thing on their little, like, the sign out, like, by the road that tells you what's playing there. It says, like, we're coming back soon. I'm like, oh, thank God, because, like, it's a nice little shitty theater, and I don't need to always go to, like, a big old fancy theater to see a movie. Sometimes it's nice just to go to, like, an empty theater on a Wednesday night and watch a movie by myself, which is how I'd prefer to do it now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed that before there was a global pandemic, so it's like...
Yeah, this was in some ways, this was ideal, the way that this worked out. You know, I want all of you to go away so I can go watch this movie. So what did I think of Shit House, you asked? Yeah. I really liked Shit House, and the way that you know I liked it is that I don't have any notes about it. Uh-huh. And so that's sort of like, you know, I watched it in sort of less than ideal ways. My wife was doing a benefit concert from our basement on Saturday night. I think it was Saturday night. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll zoom into that and watch some of that. But I was also watching this movie, but I just didn't get to finish it. So I ended up finishing it up on my phone, which is hard to take notes on my, you know, notes app if I'm watching it on the phone at the same time. But I found, like, I didn't really want to take notes. And that's sort of the way that I can tell, like, you know, the way you tell in a movie theater if you're bored is if you check your watch. And the way that I tell at home is like, well, if I'm taking notes, that's just like questions I have or like dumb things that I'm like, wait, why did they do that? And like, wasn't it stupid when this thing happened? But like, if I'm not doing that, then I'm probably into the movie and I don't like, there may be things wrong with it, but like, they're not so egregious that I want to write them down so I don't forget to talk about them later. Mm-hmm. So, but, no, but I really liked it. It was very relatable to me in some ways. Not necessarily that I felt that I could relate very heavily to the guy played by Cooper Rafe, who both wrote and directed and I think produced the movie to a certain extent. But like, you know, we've all felt like that. You know, it's a very sort of interesting thing to me in that it's not a specific... It's not so specific like the way that Lady Bird was very specific, because that took place in 2003 when I was finishing college and you were going to college. And so like the things that happened to her in that movie, it all kind of seemed period relatable to us as well as being emotionally relatable to us to a certain extent. This was the same. Like, this felt very relatable emotionally to me. And even though it takes place in the, you know, today, there's Instagram, there's iPhones, there's things like that. I don't know. I had a fairly strong connection to the character in a lot of respects. And I don't know. I just thought it was really good. It was well acted. It was wordy, but it was pretty well written. It was sort of honest. And I liked the way it was shot. Like, there wasn't a lot of editing in this film. It was, you know, it screamed low budget in its setting and the people who were hired to be in it. And, you know, it was filmed in L.A., so that's where you film low budget movies. If you're an aspiring film director, you film where you are. And, like, I just like the fact that there were these takes that just played out. They just shot scenes. They put a camera down in a quiet place. They didn't move it, and they just told the story that they wanted to tell. And it moved around enough to feel like it was a real place with real people, you know, where real things were happening to them. But I don't know. I just, you know, it gave the actors a chance to sort of breathe and stretch and do their thing. And yeah, no, I thought it was great. What'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it. It was good. It's an indie movie when it has the hallmarks of an indie movie. You know, it's the long takes, the shaky cam, the really crummy indie music they play between scenes.
Yeah, it was right Ted Mosby.
Yeah, well, did you ever see, he made a movie once too about college, where he like goes back to college. He's like a, what is he? He's like an admissions counselor for a school. And he's lonely and he's unhappy that, you know, his life is not as exciting as he wants it to be. And he goes back to his old college and he like goes to a frat party and he sees his old professors and all this stuff. And it's shot exactly the same way as this. Like most indie films, there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of like establishing shots because we have to fill the time, you know, and that's all fine. Like you can do it this way and it works. And in this movie, it works out really well because this guy did a very good job in this movie of making the details of college distinct enough that you go, oh yeah, that's what I remember that. But they're not so vague that you're like, well, this is any college experience, so I don't really care. You know, like they go to a party. And the things they do there are the things you would see at most parties, but you're seeing it from the guy's perspective where he doesn't really want to be there. He doesn't know anyone. He's trying not to get drunk. You know, it's not Animal House. It's not, you know, generic frat party.
Yeah.
You know, and if you are, you know, a middle-class person who went to college, especially if you're a young white man, this is exactly for you. So.
Yeah.
No, I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, it is a little talky, but these things are, you know, they're supposed to be that way.
You and know, so is college, too.
Sure.
Like, college is really talky. You know, most colleges in America are filled with young people, mostly white people, trying to figure out what is going on. Because the whole thing's just so ridiculous to a certain extent.
Right. I mean, they have that conversation, him and the main girl, you know, what exactly are we supposed to be doing here? Because he's not happy with how everyone behaves. And she just sort of like goes with the flow and says, this is what you have to do to make it through this, which isn't exactly right either. So, you know, when you're trying to figure out what's going on with your life, it's complicated because the signals are always crossed and confusing. John Mulaney does that great bit about college. And he says, college was a 4-year game show where do my friends hate me or do I just need to go to sleep? Which is exactly what it's like. You know.
So for those of you who didn't get a chance to see Shithouse and still want to listen to this podcast, the story is about a young guy named Alex and a young gal named Maggie. And he's a freshman at, I believe it's Occidental College. It's supposed to be. It's never mentioned in the film, yeah.
Is that where he's supposed to be?
But yeah, in the Variety review, it specifically says it's at Occidental College, which is a relatively small college, about 4,000 people, in Los Angeles. And, you know, Alex is really not engaging with college. He just kind of sits around, he goes to classes, you assume, and then you just see him hanging out in his room all the time, and he does not go to parties, doesn't know where to find parties. And he's got a really, you know, crazy roommate who gets drunk all the time, which I'm sure you can identify with a little bit. And
yeah. I can't identify with that.
And so Maggie and him, like, she's like, do you want to hook up one night? And he's like, wait, what? And then, like, the whole film takes place initially over, like, I don't know, 48 hours, like, give or take.
Yeah, pretty short.
Yeah, and it's about how the two people with two very different ways of looking at the college experience interact with each other when they clearly like each other a lot, and they spend one night together, and it's great, and then there's like the next day where it's totally different than it was the night before, and it's about, you know, how just they have such vastly different ways of thinking about what they're supposed to be doing at college, and that gets in the way of them, you know, connecting beyond the basic, you know, weirdo one night, you know. And like, this was the bit that I totally related to. It was like this kind of stuff happened in college. And I remember when I was like a freshman and I came back to visit friends from high school for like Thanksgiving or whatever, they asked me, they're like, what's it like? And I said, there are things that you will do in college that you never thought that you would ever do. And that wasn't like I was doing anything particularly crazy. Like, I wasn't going skydiving or robbing liquor stores or something like that. But like, you just, like, you never think about doing all, you've never had the opportunity to do anything you wanted. And the things you chose to do weren't always terribly interesting, you know, but like, it's not Dead Poet Society where you all get together in a cave and read poetry. But, you know, you just end up having these weird nights where you run around with people that you didn't know 24 hours earlier. And you spend, you know, from dusk till dawn doing weird, goofy, crazy things just because they're fun and you're bored. And that's basically what the first part of this movie is, you know, them having this weirdly romantic, awkward, yet persistent attraction to each other over the span of one night to do bizarre things like bury her dead turtle and then, you know, go play, you know, softball in the middle of a park in L.A. And, you know, and they have this connection. And then, like, the next day when, like, the cold light of the sun wakes them up and all of a sudden they have to deal with everything else and, like, it's just mounds of awkwardness and everyone trying to figure out what's going on. And it was just so relatable to me. Not that like this kind of thing happened to me in terms of like I didn't hook up with someone like that randomly, but like, you know, this this experience is very, very college. Yet it's not so specific to a time or place. You know, it's just, it was instantly relatable to me. I was like, that's the kind of thing I would do. I would be up all night with a girl I didn't know doing weirdo stuff. And then the next day, you know, you'd go about your business, you know, and you wouldn't pretend you didn't know each other, but you didn't know what to say to each other now. You know, everyone's emotions were specific to, a time of day or a place that, like, it wasn't transferable to the next day. It was just awkward the next day, and you weren't quite sure how to proceed with it. You know, both the girl or the guy.
Well, I mean, what helps make it stand out from everything else is that both of them are emotionally damaged in some way. You know, her more than him. You know, like as they get to know each other in that one night and they talk, you know, especially when you've only had like a half a bottle of wine and you find yourself pouring out your guts because to some basic stranger, you know, you like him, you know, he's cute, he's helping you hang out for the night because you're lonely. And she just spills the beans. Well, my parents are divorced. My father is a deadbeat. My sister and I think we're great. And this is how we cope. You know, she's willing to hook up with anybody because she just wants to hook up with people to like get over being alone. But he's not any better. He's a completely emotionally stunted person. You know, like he has to constantly call home and talk to his mother and his sister. And he's like, I like getting hugs from them. They make me feel better. And she looks at him like, what is the matter with you? Eventually you have to move out and do something and not call your mom every single minute when you're upset. You know, like their wires are completely crossed. And that's no way to go through life, son. So that ends up informing all of their decisions because all of a sudden he gets like really attached to her and she's pushing him away because that's just what she's used to doing. So like on top of being super awkward in the morning where it's like, oh, that's right, we slept together because we didn't know what we were doing with one another. Then their emotions come into play and it blows up in their faces.
Yeah. And the one thing I thought was interesting about it too was a lot of the stuff, like her behavior was very, I knew a lot of girls that did that. Like they made poor decisions and they didn't know how to deal with it the next day. So they just didn't. They just said, I'm just going to move on and not worry about it. I'm not going to pretend it didn't happen per se, but it's just not, I'm not going to dwell on it. But he said something really interesting at one point where he's like, you know, because it was clear to the audience and it was clear to his roommate that he was not handling the situation well. He was becoming too attached. And like that's something that the internet allows you to do right now that really didn't happen when we were in college. So like the craziest you could really be online was you be the first person to message someone the second their away message went away on AIM.
Yeah.
Like you would have an alert set for when this person comes back from being away and you jump up and go to your computer and go, hey, you know, like casually, oh, hey, look, you're there. Like it was, like, there was so much fraught with AIM in terms of like etiquette and like, how long do I wait between when their away message goes down and when I can send them that first, hey, like that window, it's very elastic. And if you did it too soon, then it looked really desperate and all kinds of crap. But now you just go to someone's Instagram page and like all their pictures and send them like 17 messages. And like, and I don't know, he said something interesting when the roommate was like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. You can't, you're becoming a stalker. And he's just like, no, I'm not. I like her. This is how I feel. Why do I have to play games about this? And that was, and as somebody who behaved in a moderately similar, yet not in a sort of cinematically embarrassing fashion as this guy did, that's kind of something I've always wondered too. It's like kids in college do behave like they're in middle school again. They act younger than they are. It's a very big problem, but they do it. And I kind of related to him when he was just like, why do I have to do that? I was like, yeah, I remember feeling like, why don't I just call you and tell you I want to get together and hang out or do this? And like, Why do I have to be cagey about it and pretend like it didn't happen and, you know, make it kind of, you know, pretend to be cool about it?
I mean, yeah, like the benefit to him is that he's extremely honest.
Yeah.
Like he's just like very open and he knows exactly how he feels all the time. The problem is that it can be overwhelming because like, so there's always the scene. It happens in every college building at least 10 times a year and in the movies. There's the kid who has nowhere to go and no one to talk to, and he's sitting in the common area. And someone else walks by and they start to talk. And that's where she meets him because he's like, you know, my roommate crapped his pants. It smells terrible. I'm not sleeping here. And he goes in the common area. And that's where she finds him. And, she, you know, they're talking and she kind of invites him into her room. And he goes, are we going to go have sex? Is that what this is? And she kind of like shrugs like, yeah, a little bit. And he goes, do you even know what my name is? And she says, you know, not really. And she kind of like throws it back at him. Like, do you know my name? He goes, absolutely. I know your name. You're my RA and have been for months. And what's funny is she goes, why are you making me feel bad? And he goes, you should feel bad. Yeah. And I'm sitting there like, he's not wrong. It's no. Her job to know them, you know, but his honesty is so blunt and overwhelming that other people don't know how to handle it. Like his roommate doesn't know how to deal with him until later when his roommate kind of has his own epiphany of the fact that he's always drunk.
Yeah. You
know? But before that, he's just like, why is this kid so weird? You know, because people aren't equipped to handle the blunt truth all the time. You know?
And I think what it also talks about to me, and I've been wondering about this a tremendous amount over the last 20 years, which is that, like, what are we even really doing here with college? It really sort of takes a bucket of ice water. And to me, this throws it on the entire college experience. Because, like, yeah, it's fun. And yeah, the kid doesn't know how to talk to girls very well. He's very awkward. And, you know, he finds that at the end of the film, he realizes that he's been kind of doing it wrong. And, like, which he knows the whole time, like when he's talking to the stuffed animal, which, by the way, was adorable and hilarious.
Yeah, it's very funny. The stuffed animal is very like, oh, I guess we should start packing. And it tells him to start working out. Like, maybe you should start working out. And he looks down and he goes, why would I do that? And it's like, it's only subtitles. Like the animal doesn't move. It just says, yeah. I don't know. I'm just throwing shit out there.
The best one was like the roommate was trying to make a joke. He's like, because he's like a budding stand-up comic. You cut back to him, the animal just goes, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That was good.
It was handled very well. Like,
yeah, it was a really subtle, small, you know, thing. Like, you're seeing his inner monologue, and he's using the stuffed animal as like a point of reference for the scene. But like, so he knows he's doing college wrong. And by the end, he figures out exactly what it feels like to do college correctly. Like, he knew on paper what I'm supposed to do in college. But, like, he doesn't actually know all the ins and outs. And he doesn't know what it all is supposed to feel like to him. And at the end, it's a lot of crying. And that scene when he's on the phone with his mother and his sister. His mother was really funny. I thought, like, she cursed a lot for her mom. I thought that was kind of hilarious.
Well, yeah. I mean, they were like, she was like cool, fun mom. Like they were all very close to one another.
Yeah.
You know, which is not an experience you or I shared growing up.
No, we didn't have cool, fun moms.
No. And I find it weird to see moms like that. You know,
they're generally not good moms. This mom seemed to be a good mom. Not a great mom, because there's one scene where his sister is drunk and she's like, still in high school, I think, at that point.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I didn't know how to look at. I looked at this character as very pitiful. He's a pitiful character.
Yes.
You know? And when I see the mom and he's talking to the mom, you realize that she's like the support. But at the same time, it's kind of her fault for doing that. So, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah. She's the cool mom who clearly babied her kids too much.
Right.
Like okay, that's her thing. But.
And that, I'm sure that had to do with the fact that their dad died.
Right.
when they were relatively young. I forget how he died. He tells her, I think, in the scene. I can't remember now.
I think he gets sick or something.
Yeah.
Because he has time to say goodbye and all this stuff. That's really, really sad.
Oh, yeah. It was gut-wrenching, you know. But the thing about him is, like, yeah, he's pitiful, and yeah, he's, you know, he's definitely not doing it right. But at the same time, his honesty about everything from the moment that he meets Maggie to, you know, all the way through the movie, when he has like a huge fight with her in the middle of the basketball house, and, you know, he's kind of taking a look at this, like, why are we doing this? Like, his frustration with it and is twofold. It's his inability to access it, and he's annoyed about that, and he's seeing other people having nothing but a good time, and he's not having a good time, and he's bothered by that. But he's also looking around going, why is this fun? Like, what about this is fun? I think that other things are more fun, but I'm not allowed to do those things. Like, they think I'm weird that I have my stuffed animal here. They think I'm weird that I, you know, don't always want to go to parties and things like that. He wants to have friends, but he doesn't want to deal with all the crazy party bullshit. And there's something important in that we've really come to look at college in a very warped way. And there's, you know, like, our dad had a very utilitarian way of looking at college that in no way resembled our experience. He went to college after he had been in the Air Force for 4 years during Vietnam. And so for him, it was about, like, you go here to get a piece of paper which tells you that you can now go get a job doing a thing that will make you money. That was the purpose of college. For people now, it's such a huge business, college, that they sell you on not just the degree that you're going to get, but the whole lifestyle. You know, it's basically, it's an expensive, you know, 4-year camp where you get to run around and do whatever you want, and at the end of it, they give you a piece of paper which says that you can get certain jobs, but you have the same piece of paper as a billion other people, so that piece of paper isn't worth as much as you thought it was going to be. And so there's something refreshing about the way that he looks at it, and he's like, everyone's doing this wrong in some way. And by the end, he embraces it, and he finds the right people to spend time with, and she changes because she, you know, accepts him for who he is in a way. But I think it was important that he, you know, throw some cold water on the whole thing to say, like, this is basically ridiculous, and we don't always need to behave like this. And if we do, we get in the way of things we actually want to do, in a way. And that's more for her than for him. He has his own things to do. But when he looks at the way other people behave, you know, he's kind of like, what the hell? Like, why are you acting like this? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, the problem with people that honest is that they can't understand what's real and what's not. You know, like, he takes all of her insecurities and he sees them for what they are, which are insecurities, versus, like, his roommate that he doesn't understand until the roommate finally says, like, I need to stop drinking so much. You know, and they don't become best friends or anything, but they have a couple moments. They hang out.
Well, they develop a relationship.
Yeah, like, they still talk.
And at the end of the movie, you know, it jump cuts abruptly, like 2.5 years. And you see them much later. And he's like shooting hoops with the same roommate.
Yeah.
So they maintain a relationship, even though, you know, they didn't get along initially.
Yeah. But before that, it's just like, I don't understand why people act the way they do and what they're doing, like, what their motivations are.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, like, when he goes into his room and the roommate is drinking with some other bro, some guy, and like, he's like a complete asshole for no reason. Like, he walks in, like, hey guys, and the guy, like, jumps up from the table, like, what's your problem? And, like, he cannot, like, you see it on the main character's face, like, he cannot understand why this guy is suddenly yelling at him. I mean, one is because he's drinking, but also because they're putting on personalities that aren't honest, you know? And so when the roommate kind of wakes up on Sunday and goes, oh my God, I'm so hungover, you know, what the hell am I doing? It's not until he, like, actually gets to know the roommate that he realizes what he's like, you know?
Yeah.
So it, of course you're going to have a hard time in college if you, one, don't try, but also, like, you don't play the game everyone else is playing. So everything's going to be very confusing for you. Most people aren't that honest about their lives, whether they're in college or not. So.
Yeah, and I suppose his perpetual self-honesty is alienating, to be sure.
Oh yeah, they think he's weird.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, it's one of those things. Like, he's not crazy. You're all freaking lunatics who spend the entire time lying to yourselves about what's going on here.
Fabric of society is very complex.
Yeah. But like, yeah, so it doesn't leave a lot of room for nuance, and he doesn't, yeah, you're like, it's not so much playing the game, but he spends more time judging people for their behavior and being confused by it than really trying to understand it. And the point where he really tries to figure it out is the point where he has the huge fight with Maggie in the basketball house. And, you know, throws all that shit right in her face, and there's sort of no art to it, and that's what makes him such an awkward character, is that he doesn't have any patience for other people's
right. And she has to tell him that, you know, because he doesn't understand, and he's not capable of getting outside of his own head. That's his problem. That's why he says I have no friends, I don't talk to anybody. And she's like, if you don't make the effort and get to know how people function, you will always be a little kid, you know, because the world is far more complicated than just people showing up, studying, you know, spending time with mom and dad and going home. Like, you have to go out and explore and understand people if you're ever going to learn what to do. And that's where he makes his friends, like when he joins them playing softball or something.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, there's the one scene I really liked where he goes out and he's depressed and he's like shooting hoops alone, and some random guy comes over to play with him. And then they're talking to each other and you don't hear anything. You just see that they're like the guy like has got his hand on his shoulder, like telling him it's going to be okay. That happens in college a lot too, where you just randomly run into people and they're like, what's going on? And you like spill your guts and they like try to help you out. I've seen that happen.
I wondered about that. I forgot about that scene. I wondered about that a little bit. And maybe it's sort of far-fetched. But, like, so the guy that comes over to him is an older person?
He looks like an older upperclassman kind of guy.
It's shot from so far away that I wondered if that was him playing basketball with his dad. Was that something that he was sort of imagining? Because he comes over, and you know the shot is from far back, so they're in the background. He's shooting hoops. The guy runs in out of nowhere, just starts playing with him, and they cut to this the same angle, but now he's sitting on the ground and he's talking to the guy, and then the next cut is closer, and he's the only one in the shot. He's by himself in the same position, sitting on the ground, that he was in the previous shot.
No, I just figured it was just somebody, you know, it's no one he knows. So like, hey, why don't we just shoot hoops? Or like, you know, in college when I was, it was Frisbee all the time. Like, yeah, let's just throw the Frisbee around. And then like, he tries to help him out, but he won't get up off the floor. So eventually the guy's like, well, I'm going to be on my way. I mean, that happens. Like, you want to help people out, but you don't want to be their therapist either. So it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it as a dad.
Yeah, only because the talking dog, you know, you're getting in his head that way with the stuffed animal. I thought perhaps another quiet scene that was all visual. Just the way it was shot, like from a distance where you didn't get to see who the guy was. He looked older. He was, you know, he was dressed differently. So, I don't know. It's kind of a long shot, but wouldn't have been totally out of place, would have been mostly out of place.
Yeah.
You know.
That would have felt weird.
Well, it was subtle. I mean, it was kind of, you know, you don't really know who it was. It could be just any other guy, and it could not be. It's not, you know, belabored at all, but it's just something that popped into my head. But I think overall, the great thing about the movie is that it doesn't, no one, you know, this is what makes all good movies, you know, really great, is that there's nobody who's right. You know, it's very dialectical. And, you know, I find that funny because that, you know, one of the, like, the job I have, I work with young people, you know, on something called dialectical behavioral therapy. It's a kind of way of thinking about.
Hey, what is that for those of us in the audience?
Yeah. So a dialectic is something, it's basically, it's the condition where two things that appear to be opposites are true at the same time. And it's a way of approaching therapy that doesn't, you know, it. The purpose of it is to make sure that people understand that whatever they're feeling in a certain moment is valid, even if it's not necessarily what has to happen. And a good example is basically waking up in the morning and being really tired and not wanting to go to work, but having to go to work. And to accept the dialectic is to say, okay, I'm tired. I don't want to go to work. It sucks that I have to go to work. But if I want to do these things, then that's what I have to do, despite the fact that I am not feeling up to it. So you validate what is, you know, validate not wanting to go to work, but also acknowledging that doing so is necessary. It's a way of looking at the world not in absolutes. And it's very helpful for people, like, for example, who have eating disorders, who sort of look at the world in such black and white, you know, ways. You know, if I do this, then I am fat. If I do that, then I am, you know, one thing or the other. It's a way to acknowledge feeling one way, but understanding that you have to behave in a different way. So, like, at the end, he acknowledges that he really misses his family and that he's really sort of broken without them, and he's never going to find people who are as loving and as important to him as his mother and his sister. But also, he says to them, and his mother says, let's get you one on a plane, you come home right now. He's like, no, even though I'm never going to meet someone as great as you, I still have to do this. I still have to stay here and try this and figure this out. And, you know, it's the crux of the film right there, is to say that even though I don't like this, all of it, I recognize the importance of it. And that's what really makes the film great, is that, like, there is, you know, everyone in it is flawed and everyone in it is human. And that's what makes it a good story, is that it's not as black and white as everything else we encounter in a superhero film, mm-hmm. which is all we ever talk about whenever we watch a non-superhero movie, is how much the people in the film behave like people.
Yeah. What did you think of the ending?
I really liked the ending because, A, I needed it to be happy. I couldn't have gone through all that and have it be like a sad, bitch-ass ending. Like, that would have been really annoying to have to...
Yeah, I mean, most indie movies have those kinds of endings.
What, which, the sad or the happy?
The sad ones where, like, we've all learned something here, or have we? And then we all, like, separate and go our separate ways.
Yeah, like the end of The Breakfast Club, you know?
Yeah.
For a very trite and, you know, well known sort of visual ending.
Indie movies to me are a lot like really pretentious short stories where it's like, here's a slice of life. Like, here's something that's happening with people somewhere. And then it just stops and you're not quite sure what to make of it. And that's like the whole point of the short story, you know, like bad short stories are like this. You know, here's an afternoon of these miserable people's lives, and then just sort of ends. And you're like, why did I read that? You know, like, nobody wants to watch a movie where it's just sort of over. Like, think of Lady Bird, where at the end of the movie, you know, she leaves her mother at the airport. Her mother drops her off as she flies to New York. And then she has that scene in the city where she goes into the church and she, like, cries a little. She misses home. She realizes what an impact it had on her, and blah blah blah. A bad movie would have ended with her and her mother at the airport not even saying goodbye, and it just would have been like unresolved
and gut-wrenching.
Walked out. Yeah, you would just feel bad leaving it.
Yeah, like, the best scene in that movie is the scene where the mother just drives away And then you just follow the mother. The camera's just sitting, like, staring at Laurie Metcalf as she's, like, drives away and then, like, turns around to go back to say goodbye. Like, that, oh, I still get, like, whew.
Yeah.
It's just her face for, like, 35 seconds. It's just, oh, my God, this is so awful. But it doesn't end there. You're right.
And, like, if this one ends with them trying to be a couple, even though they're ending school. And I was like, that's good. Like, yeah, because if it just ended where we see that he has friends, like, okay, he has friends, and she still has all her friends, we could say, like, well, this was a nice little 2 hours where two people had an effect on one another, and then they bounced off into the universe. But it's not. They try to make a go of it, you know, and they lay out their reasons for why. Like, he says to her, like, I only want to go out with you if you're going to be on my side. You know, not just because you're lonely and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was good. I think it was much improved by having that kind of an ending, like a definite, we're going to do this thing.
Well, yeah, it was. It's actionable. There's something that was done. You know, it wasn't just this weirdo weekend where things got kind of crazy. You know, look, we're pals now. But you're right. Like, something actually happened. Because if you think about it, nothing really happens for, like, the first, you know, two-thirds of the movie. Not really two-thirds. It's the last, the flash-forward scene is maybe, like, 20 minutes, not even. But, like, for most of the film, nothing's really happening. They're just bouncing off of each other, trying to figure things out, and nothing gets resolved, and nothing gets done. But, yeah, you're right. It's important for them to do something, make a choice, do a thing, change their situation, not just in general, but specifically with each other. Right. And one thing I love in that scene is it's clear that he's still, like, infatuated with her in some way. They go to the play that she's in. He's making jokes about how great of an actress she is. He's got that line, like, well, you know Meryl Streep? Like, she's comparing her to Meryl Streep. And so the last bit, they're in the library, and she asks him in a very sort of blunt, sort of Alex way, a way that he would have asked her in the beginning, you know, would you be my boyfriend and can I be your girlfriend? In, like, a very awkward kind of way. But it's beautiful in the sense that it mirrors how he would have asked her initially. And his response is fantastic, because, like, he goes, actually, no, she asks him, she's like, if I ask you to do this, will you stay in L.A. over the summer? And he's like, yeah. As if to say, of course I will. I've been waiting for you to ask me this question for 2.5 years. Yeah. And this sort of very simple, sort of obvious yes is, like, this guy's a really good actor. And, like, I think so much of the character is himself, and this was kind of easy, and it was his script and it was his movie, so, like, that can hurt you, you know, to direct yourself, but it can help you a lot. And I think the more you know the character, the better off it could be. You know, you have a better chance of it being a great performance than normal. I think it could also be terrible, because then you're too wrapped up in it.
Yeah,
like, but he really nails that line. He says, yeah, of course I'll do that.
Yeah, no, I forgot that she does the play, that, like, you know, he has that effect on her to get out of her comfort zone and not be this caricature of a person, you know.
And also, but, to get in front of, like, get on the stage versus being backstage, which is what she said she did in high school.
Right, and she said, like, I was that mean backstage kid. You know, which is so true.
I know.
If you've ever been in a high school play where, like, the backstage people are mean for some reason, like, they're, like, not happy to be there, and they're, like, very petty towards, like, the actors, because as the super cool guy that I was in the pit, the orchestra for these things, so I would watch both sides, like, hate each other, and I'd sit there, like, you know, there's no play without the other half, right?
Well, it's funny because, like, so, yeah, I mean, no, you didn't do the pit in the eighth grade, right? You were just there.
Oh, Yeah, no, I did.
You did. So you were in the pit when I was in the show?
Yeah. What show were you in?
So that would have been senior year. That would have been like MAME.
Oh, yeah, I did MAME. Yeah.
I forgot that you were in the pit. Totally slipped my mind.
So but I was really out of place.
Yeah, you were the eighth grader playing the trombone in the pit. And I can only imagine what the pit thought of that. And I actually didn't do that. I was very proud of the fact that I could recognize that very simple fact. Like, well, if you don't move the scenery and turn on the lights and turn on the microphones, we're all going to walk into each other in the dark and not be heard. Yeah. So why are we... And I was deliberately friends because a lot of my friends were in the were on the crew. And you're right. They did have kind of a, you know, an antagonistic attitude towards the actors who were, of course, they were full of themselves and overdramatic as actors are. And I remember a buddy of mine at one point said to me, he's like, yeah, you haven't done that thing where you get on stage and become a jerk and look backstage at the little people and, you know, look down on us. I went, yeah, no, John, I recognize that everybody here has a job to do, basically. But it is a thing that kids do, and that never goes away. Like, you
right.
know,
Patti
LuPone was Patti LuPone when she was 17. She didn't turn that way when she was 40. She's always been a lunatic, you know, and that's reinforced when you're in high school and all the people on the crew hate the people in the cast and vice versa. And the pit people are like, why are you two trying to kill each other?
Yeah. And like, I don't understand where this animosity comes. Don't you people want to be here? Like, it didn't make sense to us.
It's very bizarre.
And we didn't have that sense because it was like, you could just get a recording and like we aren't necessary. We're just a nice bonus. We could just get a recording of the show and you could play the music and like just time yourself out to it. Like, it's not like we had this.
And you also got there late in the process too. So like the pit would rehearse independent right. of the show. And like you would come in the last like week or two, whereas we'd been hanging out with each other and hooking up and breaking up and getting into fights and, you know, doing yeah. like doing things like the actors and you know would rehearse and then the crew would build this shit and like everyone did things apart, but then we were coming together with the crew a lot sooner and so like we had time to kill each other and you guys came at the last minute and you're like, wait, what is going on here? Why is everyone behaving like a jackass?
Yeah, so like when she does it in the movie, and she says, like, I was that mean, bitchy kid in the back. I was like, oh, that's what they're all like. Yeah. And at the end, when he's like, he tells her, you don't have to be that way. You can try and be an actress. And like, college is great for that because we all know you're not going to be Meryl Streep. So, like, just try something new. That's what college is good for, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Ultimate frisbee and acting.
Yeah. So, I liked the ending, I thought it was a nice touch.
Yeah, no, that was, I think I underestimated the importance of that. I liked it, and I was like, yeah, that's nice. They get together in the end, and the scene was played really well. It was very small. But yeah, no, this is a nice little gem, this kind of thing hanging out there on Apple TV. That
And I don't know if, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but like, it doesn't appeal to everybody, obviously. If you're in your 50s and you didn't have this college experience, you're going to sit here and be like, just a couple of more overprivileged white kids.
Yeah.
Yes, and that is true. However, not every movie is for everybody. You know? That's just a fact. I mean, you can hear people complaining in some reviews, like, well, not everyone likes this stuff. No shit, Sherlock. I know that. Not everyone's going to want to watch The Little Mermaid either. Or Pete the Cat. I mean, these things have audiences, so.
Yeah, it's not the most universal type of story ever. But at the same time, I don't know. I get frustrated when I hear things like that. Like, it's not for you. Okay. Like, I'm fine with that when we're talking about, like, Enola Holmes. Like, I hated that movie. Because I didn't really appreciate what they were trying to do and what they were making basically a tween movie about a girl detective. I was more bothered by just how sort of inartfully it was constructed. And you were like, well, yeah, like it was fine. It was interesting because, you know, this is who your audience is. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But then, like, people say the same thing about Star Trek. And, like, I saw someone post on Twitter about that recently, like how, like, so one person said they didn't like the new Star Trek's the Discovery show, and somebody came back and was like, well, you know, you're a jerk for thinking that every TV show has to be about you or has to be for you. It's not for you. And I'm thinking to myself, who in their right mind goes and makes something to alienate part of the people who might see it? I don't think anybody does that. And so I think, you know, this movie may not be for everybody. It may not be to everyone's taste, first of all, and it might not be an experience everyone can relate to, but the director is not making the movie trying to be like, this is a movie made for white people who went to college between, you know, 1997 and now. Like, not a small population per se, but, you know, it's certainly would be limiting if he decided to do that. But it seems to me that, like, people are really taking a look at stuff that's being made, and maybe this is a byproduct of the fragmented culture we live in now, where we have such niche audiences for things, and if you can market a product, you know, if you want to be able to sell, you know, a certain kind of sneaker or perfume or something, you know who your target audience is, then you're going to advertise only with movies and TV shows that will be seen by those people. And so now there's a market for people to make movies specifically for niche audiences. Those are designed to alienate people. And I don't think that that's a good thing. I think we should make stuff because we want everyone to enjoy it, with the understanding that not everybody will.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying that this specific movie probably doesn't resonate with certain people.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. It just reminded me of that thing where somebody was complaining about somebody else's complaining by saying they shouldn't complain because you weren't meant to enjoy this thing anyway.
Well, no, that's just a dumb argument.
Right.
Because
I think
just begging the question, like, that no one said that was the point of the movie.
Right.
I made a movie and you can't enjoy it because it's not for you. And nobody ever makes anything like that.
No, I think that now if they don't, they might.
Maybe in advertising.
Yeah, but isn't that, for the most part, what most of these things are? I mean, it's more TV shows than movies.
I'm trying to sell you Sprite. You better be black. Okay. If I want you to watch a movie about teenagers who happen to go to college, some people will have more of a universal appeal to that, and some people won't. Specifically, people who go to college will understand better than people who don't go to college.
Yeah.
If you join the army right away, you have no idea what the problem with these kids is. It's going to take you a little bit more work.
Right. It's, you know, but it's one of those things where it's like, it's a terrible argument to tell someone that, you know, they can't understand something because it wasn't designed for, you know, to please them, and therefore you're wrong for not liking it. That's dumb.
Right. But I agree.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel that, like, we seem to be making entertainment products specifically to virtue signal certain things. So, like, my wife was watching a show, the show Little Fires Everywhere. It's on Hulu. And she's describing it to me, and basically, like, she's hitting every sort of left-wing talking point. The show is about a black family who's poor that moves into a white neighborhood that's wealthy. And there's the daughter of the white family is a closeted homosexual, and she's, like, acting at, like... And so they're sort of hitting all the big things, you know, the race relations, class warfare, you know, LGBTQ community stuff. Like, it's like the show was built in a laboratory to appeal to a very specific audience. And so when your MAGA hat wearing uncle goes to watch Reese Witherspoon in this, you know, socially conscious, you know, drama on Hulu. And he says, well, this is really dumb. And they say, well, it's not for you. They're right. It's not for him. They specifically don't want MAGA, you know, MAGA Trump hat wearing people to, you know, have anything to do with this, because they just want to make products designed to be enjoyed by certain people. They're not looking to reach a broad audience. They're in some cases actively discouraging it. So when it comes to Star Trek, they're making bad TV that's full of all kinds of, like, you know, we got to have a gay couple, and the, you know, main character has to be a black woman, and they're doing all these things that are virtue signaling, but they're also really doing it to, they're making that show to make money by piggybacking on a franchise. You know, so that's a bullshit argument to say that it wasn't for you. But some shows are actually made, you know, targeted so specifically with their in-content advertising, to, you know, to have things in it that, you know, they would probably discourage other people from enjoying. And it's just that's just bizarre to me. It further serves to alienate everyone from each other, and you don't get nice things like this movie.
I think those things are done with the impression that if you're not on board with this, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I don't think they do it to specifically alienate people.
Maybe not. It does seem like that at times, though.
You know, we're gonna do this, and if you can't get on board with that, then it means you're some sort of Stone Age dinosaur person who doesn't get with it. Yeah. You know,
which is question begging, you're right.
And therefore, I don't want you to get it because you're too stupid to figure. Like, it's a looking down kind of thing versus, like, it's not that I don't want those kinds of people to watch it. It's just that it's your fault for not getting behind the agenda here.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a whole other thing.
But this doesn't do that, despite the fact that it's, you know, it's
no, highly, it doesn't do that. It's, yeah. No, that was not where I wanted that conversation to go.
What this reminds me of, though, is Tom Wolfe's "I Am Charlotte Simmons."
Yeah, in a way.
And like, but Tom Wolfe had
he was hitting all of, he was trying to hit everything in the story. I mean, the book is very long.
It's huge,
you know. And I'm like, and this one is just about, you know, the two kids. They go to a party. And they have their own things versus, like, where Tom Wolfe wanted to, like, get everything in the college experience and cram it into one year. So there's, like, the girl, there's the jock, there's the nerds, there's the people who work for the school paper, there's the professors that hate the football coaches and basketball. Like, everything you can think of in college happens in that one book, which is too much.
Yeah, it was not a great book. It was a good book, and you could, like, oh yeah, this is exactly what college is like.
It was. I mean, it was accurate, but yet it doesn't happen to one person. You know, like, I was an athlete in college, but I didn't have my professors hate my guts because I was coasting through, because, you know, I was a really good sports player. Like, it. Not everything is going to happen to you because you can't check all the boxes at once. You know, you can't do certain things. You know, you can't do all of them.
Just sort of goes through. Yep, did that.
That's right. I did do that. I was the athlete who got through and was also the nerd guy who worked for the newspaper. Like, it just doesn't work that way. So, but you're right. It is a lot like that, where it's very particular. And that's why I think the name of the movie is odd, because he goes to Shit House. Like, the name of the place where they have these parties is called Shit House. And he's only there for like 10 minutes and they don't go back.
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate title. I think I get what he was trying to do with it, because it's a metaphor for the whole experience as to how it feels at the beginning. And it's sort of, you know, when he says, where's the party tonight? Oh, it's that shit house. And he's just so confused. Like, what does that mean? Is that like the house is called shit house? It's a shit house. Like,
yeah,
it sort of encapsulates everything that's bizarre about college in one, portmanteau of shit and house.
Yeah. And but, everybody else is like, of course that's what it's called. Like, everybody else gets it but him.
Right. So yeah. in that regard, it's apt. The fact that it's called Shithouse, I think, is what does it its disservice. You could call it something else bizarre, you know, and it would be equally, you could choose a different word to serve the purpose that it did. And, okay, fine. You know, but I think this is going to do more harm than good overall. And I think if this was going to get like a big wide release, which wasn't going to happen because of, you know, of the coronavirus, maybe they would have said to him, maybe you think of a different title.
Yeah.
You know, if someone was going to buy this to then market it to, like, you know, a few hundred screens around the country, predominantly in, like, you know, L.A. and New York and Chicago and Miami kind of a thing, then, like, they would probably say, let's think of something else we could say. Like, what's his T-shirt say?
It's like, you know, Reach for the Stars or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Like, you know, I think the guy in Variety, you know, recommended that as an alternative title. But, you know, or Latrine.
Changed it to Latrine? Yeah, like it could have been that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Anyway, it's a good movie. You should check it out, especially if you went to college between now and, you know, the mid-90s.
Yeah, no, it was good.
It's all going to feel very familiar.
Yeah.
So,
you know, be prepared for that. You might have, like, weird flashbacks, PTSD or something. Oh, jeez.
It's those house parties, though. That's like, I went to a lot of parties like that in houses. So... But if you have any thoughts about the college experience or this movie, if you saw it, you can let us know on Twitter and or Instagram at @3drinksinpod. You can tell us on Facebook. You can email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, rather, or Spotify or iHeartRadio and subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave reviews. That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time. Bye.
Such an unusual name, Latrine. How did your family come by it?
We changed it in the 9th century.
You mean you changed it to Latrine?
Yeah. Used to be Shithouse.
It's a good change. It's a good change.